of abusive anger are a lack of warmth from your mate, as well as all verbal abuse, irritable outbursts, sneers, argumentativeness, temper tantrums, shouting, yelling, raging, explosiveness, and sarcasm that is directed towards you and or others. Any one of these may signal to a woman that she is with an angry man. Robert Brownbridge, LCSW, contributed the view, "Sarcasm is the tip of the iceberg, which conceals a mountain of anger." Physical signs of abusive anger include all the body language associated with anger, such as clenched teeth and a raised fist. Also, of course, any physical assault and destruction of your property is a demonstration of abusive anger. Some verbal abusers do not express their anger overtly, but abuse much more covertly. These more covert abusers are also angry and hostile. However, they don't express their anger in the pattern of the anger addict. It seems that they may be more inclined to develop long-range plans to control and manipulate their partners. Anger addicts, on the other hand, are usually quick to anger and are easily irritated. Most partners don't realize that an easily irritated person is an angry person. They believe instead that there are just some things their mate is sensitive to, but they just can't quite understand exactly what they are. In fact, the anger addict will reconstruct whatever he hears in such a way that it becomes for him the reason for venting his anger on his partner. The anger itself is irrational, as May discovered. At first, I was concerned that I'd inadvertently anger him. Later, when I realized there was no real reason for it, I was frightened of his irrationality. Chapter 10. Conditioning and the Partner. A scientist conducted an experiment. She put frog number one into a pan of very hot water. The frog jumped right out. Then she placed frog number two in a pan of cool water. This frog didn't jump out. Very gradually, the scientist raised the temperature of the water. The frog gradually adapted until it boiled to death. Anonymous. Part of conditioning is adapting. In other words, conditions may change around us and, like frog number two in the little story you just heard, we may adapt very gradually. We're not inclined to notice gradual changes. This is how most partners adapt to verbal abuse. They slowly adapt until, like frog number two, they are living in an environment which is killing to their spirit. Going back to our story, frog number one jumped right out of the hot water because she noticed a contrast between the comfortable air she had been in and the very hot water she was put into. She felt the difference. She was able to discriminate. If she had stayed in the hot water after experiencing that it was not a healthful environment, she would have been denying her experience or acting unnaturally. The partner is conditioned by her family of origin, by her culture, and by her relationship. None of us is entirely free from conditioning. Consequently, we adapt, and our conditioning influences the way we interpret our experience. Since entire books have been written on cultural conditioning and on the inequalities in our society, this chapter will serve only as a brief review, focusing primarily on the factors which seem most to condition the partner not to recognize the abuse. Primarily, the partner is conditioned to believe that her mate is rational toward her. This conditioning begins in early childhood. Who has not heard, "You have nothing to cry about," said either to herself or to someone else? Even if a parent must refuse his child another piece of candy and the child cries, the child might be comforted. I know you miss it and want it, yet I cannot give it to you. Thus, the child learns early, in her father's arms, to grieve her losses, rather than to believe that the irrational, you have nothing to cry about, is rational, real, and logical. The partner is conditioned from early childhood not to trust her feelings and not to recognize the irrationality of verbal abuse. All verbal abuse is irrational. In the context of war, the rationality of which is questionable, there may be a certain rationality to a verbal attack. In the context of a relationship, verbal abuse is irrational, and the verbal abuser is behaving irrationally. The partner's belief in the rationality of her mate is a primary assumption arising from and maintained by complex and diverse factors, not the least of which are her early childhood experiences. Deep in her own psyche, there is the conditioning of generations. C.G. Jung describes a patterning principle, which organizes our thinking or way of perceiving as an archetype. The archetype or primary image of the masculine has been considered to be that of logos, reason, or logic. Irrationality has been projected upon and identified with woman, the feminine. Consequently, the partner may believe that her mate is the rational one and that she is the irrational one in the relationship. If the abuser denies his abusive behavior, saying it never happened, or saying that what his partner has said or done is the reason for it, the partner may look for rationality, believing that her mate is logical. She may think, there must be some reason he's angry at me, or there must be some reason he thinks my work is not important, or there must be some reason he thinks I'm trying to start an argument. The belief that her mate is behaving logically is one of the primary causes of the partner's confusion. He may hold the door for her at one moment, then scream at her when she answers a question the next moment. These rapid changes from rational to irrational behavior not only increase her confusion, but may also result in her increased determination to make some rational sense of it. The partner is conditioned not only by her childhood caretakers and her culture, but also by the day-to-day abuse from her mate. Consequently, the partner may not only not recognize the abuse, but also may never in her life have asked the question, "Am I being verbally abused?" And she may never in her life have been asked the question, "Are you being verbally abused?" Many people don't really know what verbal abuse is. Usually, it is a totally new concept to the partner. When something is unnamed and is seen by no one else, it has an aura of unreality about it. The verbal abuser especially undermines the partner's self-perception. If the partner is told with gradually increasing frequency that she is illogical, too sensitive, always trying to start an argument, competitive, always has to be right, etc., she may become conditioned to accept more and more abuse while experiencing more and more self-doubt. This conditioning is like brainwashing. It may extend beyond herself to her family, her interests, and her most cherished ideals. Consider the case of Leah. Luke constantly presented to me that I had a flaky family. He did this in subtle ways. I gradually began to think he was in touch with the real world, and I and my family weren't. I became confused. Actually, when I thought about my relatives, I realized they were highly respected and had made real contributions to society. Still, I felt like there was something wrong with my background. Like his family was more solid. Actually, now I can see that none of this was true. It was like brainwashing. Denise Nguyen, author of The Manipulated Mind, tells us that With regard to brainwashing or psychological coercion, social and psychological factors and unconscious conditions which combine to create it may each be powerful influencing forces on their own. She tells us that victims of brainwashing had certain experiences in common. Some of these are that their certainty was undermined. Their behavior was shaped by the use of rewards and other conditioning processes. They were led to believe that no one at home cared what happened to them. They felt out of control and learned helplessness. Public humiliations served to undermine their egos. Need for friendship and approval led them to comply. Induced anxiety, guilt, fear, and insecurity led to suggestibility. The unpredictability of their captor's behavior confused their expectations and assumptions. Without a norm to which they could adapt, they felt even less in control. Wynn, 1983. Wynn also describes Robert Lifton's research. She tells us that Lifton pinpointed the features which seemed to him to be characteristic of ideological totalism and necessary for maintenance of its hold over individuals. It is interesting to note that the first one named is control over all forms of communication. Certainly, within the relationship itself, the abuser can control all the interpersonal communication by denying the abuse and by refusing to discuss with his partner her pain and distress. As May put it, he has a secret agenda. He's trying to control you. If you don't know his secret, you're helpless. In all cultures, words of wisdom and traditions are passed down from one generation to the next. This is part of our cultural heritage. Unfortunately, malevolent mores and half-truths are also passed down to us. Many of these have become clichés through which the partner may interpret her experience. Some of these clichés and what they tell the partner are in the forthcoming list. Malevolent mores and clichés. It takes two. If the partner believes this, she will assume that she is to some extent to blame for the upset. Love conquers all. If the partner believes this, she may think that if she is more loving and accepting of her mate, he would reciprocate. You can rise above it. If the partner believes this, she may think that if she were just stronger, she would be able to rise above her pain. Be glad you have a roof over your head. If the partner believes this, she may think she is expecting too much and should be glad for what she has. If you can't say something nice about someone, don't say anything at all. If the partner believes this, she may think it is disloyal or unkind or judgmental to talk to others about her mate's confusing behavior. A woman has to give a little more than a man. If the partner believes this, she may think that she should put forth more effort to understand her mate and to share herself with him so he'll understand her better. Be nice to people, and they'll be nice to you. If the partner believes this, she may think that when her mate yells at her, he thought she wasn't being nice, and that she can explain to him that she wasn't saying what he thought. Take it with a grain of salt. If the partner believes this, she may think that if she could take being yelled at more lightly, she wouldn't feel so badly. If you open up to him, he'll open up to you. If the partner believes this, she may think that if she shares herself, he'll share himself. Keep trying. If the partner believes this, she may think that there must be something she hasn't thought of that she could try in order to understand her mate and get him to understand her. Never give up. If the partner believes this, she may think that giving up the hope of reaching understanding with her mate is a failure on her part. His bark is worse than his bite. If the partner believes this, she may think that words shouldn't bother her. You can't expect too much. If the partner believes this, she may think that she should lower her expectations. People don't always mean what they say. If the partner believes this, she may think that no matter how badly she feels, he didn't mean it, so she shouldn't feel it. Keep smiling. If the partner believes this, she may think that if she maintains her optimism, she'll discover a way to understand her mate. He doesn't know any better. If the partner believes this, she may think that if she explains what hurts her, he'll know better and stop hurting her. It's just a stage. If the partner believes this, she may think that if she waits, pretty soon he'll be in a better mood. Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words will never hurt you. If the partner believes this, she may think that no matter what he says, she shouldn't feel hurt. You should accept others the way they are. If the partner believes this, she may think that she should accept and understand her mate's behavior. Judge not, lest you be judged. The partner may fail to discriminate between acceptable and unacceptable behavior, thinking that to do so would be wrongly judgmental. You create your own reality. The partner may believe that she is doing something wrong, creating the difficulties in the relationship, or the wrong feelings. Nobody said life was easy. The partner may believe that having difficulties in her relationship is the way life is, and that her relationship is not any more difficult than anyone else's. For better or worse. If the partner believes this, she may think that better follows worse and that things will get better. The partners. The women I interviewed who were the partners and former partners of verbal abusers were primarily of middle and upper middle socioeconomic classes. Their levels of education ranged from high school graduate to PhD. Their occupations were varied and included artist, professor, homemaker, and shopkeeper. As partners of verbal abusers, they had been frustrated, responsible, hopeful, empathetic, compassionate, naive, trusting, optimistic, desirous of understanding, tolerant, accommodating, confused. Chapter 11. The Recognition of Verbal Abuse and Asking for Change. Not to know is bad. Not to wish to know is worse. Nigerian proverb. When the partners of verbal abusers first begin to suspect that something is really wrong in their relationships, they usually describe some interaction with their mate to a counselor or confidant. Then they ask, "Is that normal?" If the partner doesn't ask about the normalcy of her mate's behavior, she may, instead, ask if her friend has ever had such an experience as she has described. This first stage of recognition is the beginning of the partner's change from doubting herself to doubting her mate. It is a time when she is beginning to wonder if everyone's relationship has the kind of painful incidents that she experiences. It is a time when the partner does not yet realize that, in healthy relationships, one person doesn't yell at, put down, or hurt the other, and that if any such infringement upon personal dignity does occur, it is an unusual and usually unprecedented event for which the perpetrator takes great pains to make amends. When the partner begins to recognize verbal abuse for what it is, she has awakened from the illusion that her mate shares her reality. As she first glimpses her mate's reality, where dominance and power over substitute for personal power, she may find her mate's motivations nearly incomprehensible. It is hard to believe that he has treated her as he has in order to dominate and control her, and not because there was anything wrong with her or her perceptions or her feelings or her thinking or her actions or her competence. When the partner realizes that she and her mate are living and acting in different realities, she realizes that she is, in fact, being verbally abused. Since she experiences her power through mutuality and co-creation, this recognition may be deeply shocking. The partner's recognition of her mate's reality may be even more shocking if he is successful in the world and seemingly powerful. As shocking and painful as this recognition of the abuser's reality usually is, it is necessary because, otherwise, the partner may continue in the relationship for years, hoping that her mate will understand what hurts her, and that when he understands, it won't happen anymore. What happens if the partner cannot validate her own reality and recognize her mate's reality? If the partner does not recognize the abuser's reality, she will automatically fit his behavior into the context of her reality of mutuality and co-empowerment. Following is an analysis of an abusive incident which illustrates how this happens. This analysis describes the partner's and the abuser's thoughts and illustrates the difference between the abuser's and the partner's realities. Their thinking is common to many verbally abusive interactions in which there is a persecutor and a victim. I shall call this interaction the shrimp salad drama. Have you experienced shrimp salad dramas in your relationship? At lunchtime, the abuser comes into the kitchen asking, "Is there anything for lunch?" "I left a shrimp salad in the refrigerator." The abuser angrily yells, "What makes you think I want salad?" The partner is thrown off balance. The anger and the implication that she is thinking he wants salad bring forth her response. "Why are you mad? I didn't say that." "Just lay off of me. You're always trying to be right." They are in two different realities. The abuser is angry because his partner has protested with, "Why are you mad?" However, the partner thinks he is angry because she has somehow upset him by the way she mentioned the salad. After all, she knows he loves her. She believes that he must have felt she was insisting on his having the salad, but actually, she'd be happy to have it for her own lunch, and he just doesn't realize this. She thinks, "Maybe we can talk it out, so he'll know I never meant he had to have the salad." She thinks he is in her reality of mutuality. She explains, "I want you to know that what I meant was..." She is now referring, of course, to her first statement, that she'd left salad in the refrigerator. The abuser interrupts her because he is fighting her question, "Why are you mad?" He will take any response as adversarial because he does not want to acknowledge his irrational anger. He assumes that his partner is in his reality of power over. He thinks, "Aha, you are questioning me, trying to make me look bad, and trying to be right." Her attempt at reconciliation, "I want you to know that what I meant was," is interrupted with an angry, fed-up tone in the abuser's voice. He seems to be smoldering as he says, "If you're going to go on and on about it, I can eat out." The abuser's total denial that he was abusive closes his mind to his partner. As he gets angrier, she tries harder to understand how saying the salad was in the refrigerator can make him think she thought he wanted it. He, of course, isn't angry about the salad. He's angry because he wants to vent his anger with complete impunity. This impunity was threatened when she said, "Why are you mad?" He felt that she was opposing him and that he might be losing his power over her. The great tragedy in a verbally abusive relationship is that the partner's efforts to bring reconciliation, mutual understanding, and intimacy are rejected out of hand by the abuser, because to him, they are adversarial. This is so because if he isn't feeling power over his partner, he is feeling that she must be trying to overpower him. There is no mutuality in his reality. Following are some more examples of how the partner may automatically fit the abuser and his behavior into her reality. If her mate trivializes her work, the partner may believe that he really does want to support her and that he is only talking about it as unimportant because he doesn't realize how important it is to her. And as soon as he understands that it is important to her, he will stop trivializing it. Here, the partner fits what she's hearing together with her belief that her mate shares her reality and so wants to give her emotional support. Interestingly, abusers who trivialize their partners often brag about them to others as they would brag about a possession. If he counters all her views, she may believe that he really respects her views but just can't accept the fact that she has them, because he seems to think differently from her and so can't understand her. In this case, the partner fits what she hears from her mate into her reality of mutuality. If he yells at her, she may believe that it is because he feels in some way hurt by something she said or did. She may also believe that he wants to know what she really said or did, so he'll know she really loves him and his hurt will be gone. In this way, the partner fits what she is hearing into her reality of empathetic concern. If he says he doesn't know what she's talking about, she may believe he wants very much to catch her meaning and to understand what she is talking about, so she must try harder to explain it more clearly. She is sure that her mate is striving to understand her and that he shares her reality of co-empowerment. If he tells her she shouldn't feel what she's feeling, she may think that, since his intentions are really caring, she must have misheard what bothered her, or, possibly, that her feelings are just wrong. If she fits his response into her reality, she can see no other reason why he would tell her that her feelings are wrong. If he criticizes her words out of context, she may fit this criticism into her reality of mutuality by assuming that he's upset because he is trying very hard to follow her thinking, but he can't unless she speaks with more accuracy or learns to understand how he thinks. If he doesn't respond or talk to her, she may think he is very shy or slightly autistic, but really wants to communicate with her, since that is part of the joy of mutuality in a relationship. In this way, the partner may fit a lack of response into her reality of mutuality. If he says he cannot remember a conversation, which she is absolutely certain he can remember because it had been so disturbing, she may fit his inability to remember into her reality of mutuality by coming to the conclusion, as terrifying as it is, that he has a split personality. That is, sometimes he is in her reality, and sometimes he's gone, and an unfriendly voice takes over that he cannot remember. One partner harbored this fear of her mate's split personality for several months before she broached the subject with her counselor. When she did express her fear, she described her mate as having an autonomous voice that said things he didn't remember. If she believes that he sees the world as she does, that he shares her reality, it's easier for the partner to think her mate is crazy than to recognize that he is abusive. One of the reasons the partner fits her mate's verbally abusive behavior into her reality of mutuality is that she, like many, is conditioned to see the world in terms of immediate cause and effect. For example, she may believe If he is angry at me, then I must be the cause. However, the human psyche operates in a very different way. The cause of an event occurring today may be an event occurring many years before, in infancy or childhood. This is especially so with verbally abusive behavior. On the other hand, if her mate were not abusive and actually felt upset about something, he would, as any non-abusive person would, discuss the problem with his partner. He might say, for example, "I saw you spend time at the party talking to Joe. I thought you might rather be with him than with me. I felt lonely and jealous, so I would like to know how you feel about him and if I could have more time with you at parties." Even if he finds it difficult to define his own feelings and thus does not realize that he is jealous, he will at least know that he is unhappy and needs to talk to his partner. Recognizing the abuser's reality helps the partner to recognize the abuse for what it is. When she no longer sees her mate's behavior from an immediate cause and effect standpoint, the partner might realize, "Oh, he yelled at me because he wants to control or intimidate me, not because of something I've said or done." Or, "He said that to put me down so he can feel powerful. I will not accept this abuse." Here is another way that the partner's inability to recognize her mate's reality may affect her ability to recognize verbal abuse. Because she thinks that her mate shares her reality of mutuality, reality too, she knows he is striving to understand her. Consequently, she may think she's just not good at explaining herself or getting across to her mate what she really means. Otherwise, he wouldn't get angry. Consequently, she doesn't see the disrespect for what it is. Her ability to discriminate is impaired. To discriminate means to see the difference. If the partner can see the difference between her reality and her mate's, she can discriminate. How can I know that it's not something I've said or done in some unconscious way that makes him mad? Many partners ask. These partners do not yet have reality to self-esteem. A partner with reality to self-esteem would not ask this question because she knows that there is no justification for being yelled at or snapped at. Many partners live with their mates for many years before coming to the realization that they do not share the same reality. Knowing that there is nothing wrong with her and that the abuse is irrational does not necessarily lessen the partner's pain. On the contrary, the abuse is not only painful, but now may also be more frightening to the partner because she realizes that it is irrational. We naturally fear the irrational because acts of violence and abuse are irrational and are irrationally denied or justified by the perpetrators. One of the reasons that it is important to recognize verbal abuse is that it is a warning sign that physical abuse may eventually erupt. Basic rights in a relationship. Besides understanding the various categories of verbal abuse and recognizing the abuser's reality, it is useful to understand the basic rights of relationship, which are violated by verbal abuse. Following is a list of some of these rights. The right to goodwill from the other. The right to emotional support. The right to be heard by the other and to be responded to with courtesy. The right to have your own view, even if your mate has a different view. The right to have your feelings and experience acknowledged as real. The right to receive a sincere apology for any jokes you find offensive. The right to clear and informative answers to questions that concern what is legitimately your business. The right to live free from accusation and blame. The right to live free from criticism and judgment. the right to have your work and your interests spoken of with respect. The right to encouragement. The right to live free from emotional and physical threat. The right to live free from angry outbursts and rage. The right to be called by no name that devalues you. The right to be respectfully asked rather than ordered. You need to feel safe and respected within your relationship. I believe that if there is respect and goodwill in a relationship, other issues can be addressed. However, until the issue of verbal abuse and the abuser's underlying need for power over is resolved, little progress, if any, can be made in the relationship. That is to say, if there is no verbal abuse, there is openness and a willingness to discuss the hopes, fears, desires, needs, and expectations of both parties. I do not believe that two people in two different realities can develop a relationship, although they may live in the illusion of one. Just as the partner has perceived the abuser's reality, so too must the abuser recognize his own reality and his own behavior and come to terms with his own sense of personal powerlessness. Now, if you were to realize that you and your mate are in different realities and that he was saying some things to you that were abusive, and if at the same time you were to realize that he was saying these things because he really felt powerless inside, it would not be a good idea to think that you could explain this to him. In fact, to try to do so would put you right back into being subject to more abuse, because he would see your explanation as a defense. You would be stepping into his reality, where a defense is met with a greater attack. What can I do then? You might ask in despair. There is something you can do. There are steps you can take to protect yourself and to determine whether or not your mate is willing and able to change, whether he wants to change, and whether there is a possibility of connection and intimacy in your relationship. If you are in a new relationship, you may choose to leave the relationship immediately. However, if you have no job, have dependent children, feel fear or lack self-confidence, you may need time to decide what to do. In the meantime, you can decide what you will and what you will not accept from your mate, and you can inform him of your decisions. In making these decisions, you must rely upon your own feelings and your own judgment. The very feelings and judgment you have been conditioned by the abuse to doubt and to fear acting upon. In order to implement these steps, you will need to act at your own pace. In most cases, it is very beneficial to get support from professional counseling, support groups, and friends. If you are in an abusive relationship, there are a number of issues you may need to consider. You may need to evaluate what does and does not work for you in your relationship, as well as your emotional and financial dependency. You may need to become aware of your unmet needs for connection and intimacy, and your right to be treated with courtesy, respect, dignity, and empathy. Setting limits and asking for change is very difficult and challenging. Once you recognize your needs and rights and begin to ask for change, you confront the possibility that no change will be forthcoming. Asking for change is important, however, for only by doing so will you discover whether or not the possibility of a healthful relationship exists with your mate. If your mate is a confirmed verbal abuser, when you start setting limits and asking for change, he may increase the intensity of the abuse in an attempt to increase his control over you. If it has taken you some time to recognize the abuse for what it is, and to recognize the abuser's reality, It is likely that your mate will take some time, also, to recognize your reality and to admit to what he is doing. Keep in mind that not all abusers will change. After all, they are not suffering in the way that their partners are suffering. Consequently, they are not motivated to the degree that their partners are. Be aware that unless an abuser is willing to give up his denial of the abuse, he cannot begin to change. In order to change, to develop empathy and understanding, to become non-abusive, he will need to work through all that has engendered within him his deep feelings of personal powerlessness. You do not need to accept your mate's behavior. With support and counseling, you can determine your needs. You can set limits, and you can ask for change. It takes time to fully realize what has been happening in your relationship and how the abuse has affected you, especially if the abuse has been severe. How severe is the abuse? Partners who have been subject to all the categories of verbal abuse have been severely abused. If you are with an anger addict, you have been severely abused. If you feel unexpected stabs of pain from what you hear from your mate, you have been severely abused. If you have never felt a sense of understanding and resolution after talking over a hurtful incident with your mate, you have been severely abused. If you have been with a verbal abuser for a number of years, you have been severely abused. As was stated in the introduction, the intensity of anguish which the victim suffers determines the extent of the injury. The quality of the experience of the victim defines the degree of abuse. I have found that verbal abuse affects the partner's sense of herself and her self-esteem, usually without her recognizing it. Therefore, as might be expected, the process of recognizing verbal abuse includes the process of recovering from the abuse. Recovery is addressed in the next chapter. If you suffer from verbal abuse in your relationship, or suspect that you do, these are some steps you can take. 1. Get professional counseling support. Find a supportive counselor who is experienced with the issue of verbal abuse and with whom you feel comfortable. Sources include referrals from therapists in other fields, BWA, Battered Women's Alternatives recommendations, referrals from social service agencies, and referrals from friends. 2. Ask your mate to go to this counselor with you. Firmly and clearly, tell your mate that in order to have a happier and more satisfying relationship, you want him to see a counselor with you. If he is unwilling, or this seems impossible to you, go by yourself. You will already have met and chosen the counselor you want to work with. In the counseling relationship, you will gain much-needed support and clarity. 3. Start setting limits. Stating what you will and what you will not accept from your mate and informing him of your decisions is called setting limits. By firmly setting limits and calling the abuser on every abuse, you may bring to his attention the fact that he is being abusive. However, it is also possible that he may refuse to hear anything you say and continue to abuse you. Setting limits may be very difficult because, of course, you do not know whether or not your mate can or will honor your limits, nor do you know whether or not he will want to honor your limits. You do not know whether he will tell you that he will try to honor your limits or whether he will tell you that he can say anything he wants. You do not know whether he simply has a few bad habits or whether he is really hostile. Setting limits is a serious proposition because when you are setting limits, you are not threatening. Threats are often idle forms of manipulation. Threats are stated in the form, if you... I'll, dot, dot, dot. Setting a limit is stating a fact. I will not accept. When you set limits, you speak from your own personal power, and you speak for the spirit of life at your center. You decide what is harmful and what is nourishing to your spirit. In order to set limits, you need to know what your limits are. This means that you, and only you, must decide what you will and will not accept in your relationship. This is when the extraordinary self-esteem I have described throughout this book must be called upon. This self-esteem is available to you because it arises from the spirit of life at your center. When you are ready with your self-esteem and your trust in yourself, you are ready to set limits. To do so is to simply say, I will not accept. It is up to you to choose from the 15 categories of verbal abuse the one you want to start with. For example, I will not accept comments or jokes which diminish or disparage me or put me down. It isn't easy for the partner of a verbal abuser to set limits, because she must give up all her usual ways of seeking resolution and reconciliation, ways which she has tried during all the upsetting experiences she has had with her mate. These ways include explaining, trying to understand, trying harder to be understood, trying to figure out what went wrong, and so forth. Besides self-esteem, setting limits requires extraordinary trust in yourself and your own feelings and your own perceptions. So much trust that if you are, for example, yelled at, you know that, even if he thinks it is justified, you will not accept it. Even if he thinks it is a joke, you will not accept it. Even if he does not understand, you will not accept it. Even if he says it is your fault, you will not accept it. Even if he says you do not know what you're talking about, you will not accept it. Even if he says you are just trying to be right, you will not accept it. Even if he says you are a bitch, you will not accept it. Even if he says 100 things, you will not accept it, nor will you accept the 100 things. Even if you have made a mistake, you will not accept the abuse. You know, for example, that you will not accept being put down or raged at for a simple mistake. With reality 2 self-esteem, you know that you do not deserve to be yelled at. With reality 2 self-esteem, you know that you do not deserve any verbal abuse at all. 4. Stay in the present, trying to dwell neither on the past nor on your concerns for the future. Become aware in the present, moment by moment, of any angry outburst or disparagement directed at you. With this awareness, you will need to respond to the abuse in a new way. In the past, you may have told your mate when you were upset, hurt, frustrated, etc. You may have told him what you were upset about, and you may have asked him not to yell at you, or you may have asked him to check with you to find out what you were really saying before he got mad. You also may have found that none of this was effective in stopping the abuse. Your goal is to call the abuser on every offense. Once you have determined your limits, you reinforce them by calling a halt to every bit of abuse you hear. Specific responses to each category of abuse are suggested in the next chapter. At any time, however, a firm, authoritative stop it is effective. Your authoritative response will give your mate the clear message that you mean what you say and will not tolerate any abuse. You will need to respond as soon as you hear the tone of his voice. If you become caught by the words, you will simply become confused. as did the partner in the shrimp salad drama example. Remember, any response such as, "What I meant was," suggests to the abuser that his reality is valid, that you are the adversary, and that he can step up his attacks, even claiming that you are attacking him. Of course he is not justified, but he will take any explanation as adversarial and defensive. 5. Be aware that you can leave any abusive situation. Please note that 4 of the 40 women I interviewed had been hit by their mates. Most had been repeatedly yelled at. Most had, at one time or another, thought they were about to be hit. Most said, "He's never hit me, but I have been afraid of his anger." Carry enough money with you so that you can pay for transportation home from wherever you are. You are a free citizen. You never have to stay where you feel uncomfortable. Carry your personal phone book with you so that you have the numbers of friends if you need to call someone. If you are out at a party or a restaurant or staying in a hotel and you are being yelled at, put down, etc., and you find that saying "stop it" does not put an end to the abuse, or if for any reason you do not feel comfortable remaining, simply leave. This is your right and your responsibility to yourself. Keep a bag packed in your car, if you have your own car, or else in a safe and easily available place so that you know you do not have to stay where you are subject to any kind of abuse. Plan ahead where and how you will go if you need to leave your residence. These steps will give you a sense of control over your own life and help to alleviate the fear of being hurt one more time. 6. Ask for changes that you want in your relationship. Intimacy in a relationship requires a mutual intention to communicate, to understand, to respond appropriately, as well as the intention to support the other emotionally. Setting limits is a way of asking for change. You may also ask your mate to discuss with you other changes you may desire. These may include the negotiation of the following: how much time you need to yourself, and how much time you would like to spend together. Setting aside a special time each week to discuss current issues in the relationship. Making plans together for the future. How to jointly manage finances. Some difficulties you may encounter. If you have been blamed for abuse, you may feel somehow guilty or at fault, or as if you are betraying your mate by discussing your concerns about your relationship with an outside party. You may even feel that reading about verbal abuse may harm your relationship. You may have these feelings if you have been conditioned to believe that your difficulties and pain are your fault. You may also be conditioned to feel wrong about setting limits and refusing to accept abuse. For example, phrases such as "you're just looking for trouble" or "you're always trying to start something" may condition you to believe that the abuse is your fault and that you are making things worse. If you are with a verbal abuser and are resolved to set limits and to challenge your mate on any infringement, you may continue to meet with intense denial. In this case, remember that a verbal abuser defines his partner and the interpersonal reality. He also defines himself, particularly that he is right and non-abusive. It is important, therefore, that you completely accept your own perceptions and your own feelings. When you can define your own reality as separate and different from your mate's, you gain clarity, self-esteem, and autonomy. Knowing that what the abuser has told you about yourself is not at all true, but is in fact abusive, can help you to recognize how your mate has attempted to define you in terms of his reality. One way to become more aware is to turn each accusatory statement around into an I know that I am not statement. Following are some examples. I know that I am not competitive. I know that I am not always trying to start a fight. I know that I am not too sensitive. I know that I am not a bitch. I know that I am not selfish. I know that I am not judgmental. I know that I am not attacking. I know that I am not trying to have the last word. I know that I am not. Keep adding everything you have been told you are, because if you are with a verbal abuser, you can be certain that you are not what you have been told. Another difficulty may occur if the abuse has taken place primarily when no one else was around and was then denied by the abuser. Since this abuse occurs in secret, no one in the world can validate your experience. You may think you have taken everything wrong, as you so often have been told you do. You may truly think there is something wrong with you because no one else was around to say, hey, that's abusive. Or you may think that your mate has no idea of what he's doing. If this is the case, it is important to remember that most crimes are committed in secret, just like most verbal abuse. Just as the rapist knows what he is doing in secret, the abuser knows what he is doing in secret. He may not know what compels him. The confirmed verbal abuser can be counted on to deny the abuse vehemently and to tell his partner angrily that her perceptions are wrong or that she is responsible for the abuse. If the abuser continues to deny the abuse, then his denial locks him into a more or less permanent psychological stance. The abuser who denies all, is unwilling to discuss the issue, and remains hostile, does not want to change. In order to change, he would have to break through his denial, admit to the abuse, and work through the issues which left him with such a great need for dominance and power over. Another real difficulty the partner may encounter is the painful realization that she is the primary and often the only person he abuses. Why would he do this to me? She might ask. The psychological reasons that this abuse occurs most frequently in relationships are discussed in Chapter 15 and have to do with the psychological phenomena of projection. Knowledge of the abuser's reality brings the partner an opportunity for real growth and inner peace. She can discover through confrontation and counseling whether or not the abuser wants to change. She can cherish and accept herself and build her reality to self-esteem. She can choose a more nourishing environment. My peace of mind is worth everything I went through, said Bella. Recognizing verbal abuse for what it is emotionally painful. It has to do with loss, the loss of illusion, and grieving that loss. This pain runs its course and makes room for the natural healing process. It isn't insidious and damaging the way the pain of abuse is. As Anne put it, I realize I kept forgetting the hurt and pain, and from what I've read, I know I was beginning to show the symptoms of a battered wife. I'm shocked. Cora summed it up this way. It is incredibly painful and heartbreaking when you realize that the man you love is hostile toward you. Clearly, verbal abuse is hurtful to the spirit. Nevertheless, through knowledge, awareness, and action, we may heal the spirit. In doing so, we must face the fact that psychological freedoms are usually won through emotional pain and feelings of loss. None have been won anywhere and in any time without effort and action. Even a plant seeks light and the most nourishing environment in which to grow. The survivor of abuse can do no less. Lastly,